I'm Ashley Eicher.
I'm Hunter Kelly.
And welcome to an all-new episode of the All Our Favorite People podcast. Y'all, Hunter and I are basically just trying to kind of come back down to earth right now.
So I'm flying.
Yeah, we just left Amy Grant's house.
It happened.
And she could not be more lovely or more kind, which we both interviewed her before separately, so we knew that. But there was something today just about being her presence and just listening to the stories that she was telling in this conversation. And for both of us, I mean, Amy had such a huge impact on me growing up, just not only just being a role model in the world, but it, like listening to her music, it was like Baby Baby and Breath of Heaven. And it was like her and Aretha and Whitney and Houston and Wynonna and Trisha. Those were the women that I looked to and wanted to sing all of their songs. And I know she had such an impact on you too.
Oh, and you hear it. I mean, and there are things that both of us wanted to talk about we just didn't get to because you're in there and Amy has this way of telling stories. And it's not like we've both been around her and we basically, both of us, anytime she speaks anywhere, we're like, what did Amy say? It's always something new. It's always something you've never heard before. And it's just...
It comes from such a deep, heartfelt, thoughtful place too.
And funny. Oh my gosh. I blushed a few times, y'all. I did.
Oh, you really did. You actually really did. So there are moments in here. She tells this incredible story about Minnie Pearl, who I grew up loving because of my grandparents. He was a real mentor to her. And there's another moment about Vince. It's hilarious. So there's just so much things. But there's when she was telling some of these stories, it's like we knew where we wanted to go. But then she'd start telling this incredible story. And you're like, I just need to sit with that for a second. Like, I just want to take this in. Yeah. So
basically, I mean, I think I mentioned this to her on the way out. Like, Amy, ultimately, we need another collection of your stories, another book. And so I think this was an attempt for us to just try to collect some of those great moments and share them with you guys out there.
Yeah. So here she is, Amy Grant.
Okay, so we're rolling. We can just
rolling.
All right, fantastic.
I was like, are we rolling?
Yeah.
This was all great. How long have y'all been doing this?
Almost a year.
Yeah, almost a year in May.
So when we say, Amy, thank you for having us into your home.
Oh my gosh, we're at Amy Grant. Vince Gill just left the room.
Yes.
And Amy Grant has served us tea.
Yes. This is like the best
Hospitality.
Monday.
Hospitality. This is a great Monday morning.
It feels good and the sun is shining.
It's very sunny here.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we start?
Well, you asked just a minute ago, when did we launch this podcast? And it'll be a year in May. And so for us, when we sort of dreamed up this idea, we're like, we just want to be able to sit down and talk to whoever we want to talk to about really anything we want to talk about. And when we created like our dream, which can get really hairy sometimes, but we've been friends for so long. So it was an opportunity for us to do something together. But when we had our just dream list of people, you were at the top of the list, because I think for both of us, and we've been talking about this over the last couple of days, just the influence that you've had on both of our lives as an artist and the music that we grew up with, but also I think for me, just seeing you as a role model in this community and the way that you love so well.
Thank you.
So. Yeah. No, wait, and also your name.
Let me just start off.
I feel like I need to be very loving.
Let's just start off saying that we love you.
That's where I was going.
So much. But I think it's another thing is that among the interviews that we've done on the podcast, your name has come up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Should we start with Ellie?
Yeah, I think...
Should we start with Ellie Holcomb?
We're going to have a lot of fun in this conversation, but this was...
Okay, so, I love Ellie.
But Ellie told us this story of being on tour with you, and it was the first night, and the way she explained is that you all were doing, like, a I guess, some sort of VIP type thing right before the show.
Q&A.
A Q&A.
Right, and it was Nicole Nordeman and Ellie and me. Yeah, like a sort of a glorified songwriter night, because we had... A stage full of musicians.
Yeah.
So, yeah, glorified songwriter.
So she was telling us about just how nervous she was going into that night, because she'd known you for so long, because her father was your producer, but also grew up just loving you and wanting to be an artist, she just looked up to you so much. She was telling us that. She goes, so I sit back and I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, how am I even here with Amy and Nicole? And she goes, and I'm trying to just kind of gather myself and feeling really nervous at the same time. And so she goes in this entire story, but then she sort of explains, what was the question from the audience member? Do you have the audio?
Well, we have the audio. We can just drop it in right now for everybody to hear.
Okay. All right.
I will never forget the first, this tour that I got to go on with she and Nicole Norman. The first day of the tour, I'm like having those, like, you know, I just, who are you that you were on stage with these two incredible women? Like, what are you doing here? You know, like all these, like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of shame storm kind of thoughts. Yeah. And all three of us did like a VIP Q&A session before. Okay. So I'm like, first of all, no one here even knows who I am. Like, I'm here to hear Amy answer questions, and people are trying to like, they're trying to like rotate it. Like, they ask a question and have all of us answer. I'm like, nobody wants to hear from me. I don't want to hear from myself. I want these other two ladies to talk. So someone asked, like, Amy, how do you like feed your soul? Like, how do you feed yourself spiritually? Like, how do you take care of your soul when, with all the things that you're balancing, touring, being a mom, you know, I mean, like, how do you balance all of this? And I mean, she just took this deep breath and just said, you know what? She was like, honestly, I just want everybody to stand up in the room right now. And she was like, I just need to be real with y'all. She's like, there is so much noise that I hear in my head every day. So many voices, so many things saying you need to be this or do this. She said the voices that I'm hearing right now are, you're too old. Like, your voice isn't the same as it used to be. You know, you're going to be a disappointment. These people are coming here to hear Amy Grant. And I actually don't feel like I have it anymore. And, honestly, I just want to be at home. I miss my family and my people. And, she was like, there's so many noises. She said, but if I can get down, if I can acknowledge the noises that I'm hearing and just say out loud, but this is how we live, surrendered and loved, and get down on my face and take one deep breath. She said, a lot of times, I'll come back to center. And so she had everybody in the room stand up, and she was like, all right, just identify some of the noise that you're hearing right now. And she said, okay, everybody go down on your face. There are 150 people in the room. Nicole Norman and I are standing up, and we're like, okay, we're doing this. We're going down on our face in front of all these people. It was the thing that I needed to do the most. She goes, okay, this is how we live, surrendered and loved. We all got down on our faces, took one deep breath, stood back up. There's some awkward kind of laughter chatter. And she goes, I don't know about y'all, but the voices are pretty loud some days, aren't they? She goes, what are some of the voices? What are some of what's some of the noise that you're hearing? So people in the room just start saying, depression, lost my job, weight, can't ever lose, I'm never gonna lose the weight. And she's like, yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. But this is how we live, surrendered and loved. Complete silence in the room. We all go down together, take a deep breath, and stand up. And I was just like, Amy, thank you. Like, what? And so I'm thinking, this is the thing, we're going to do it every night of the Q&A. Nope, never happened again. She just did it that one night, and I needed to take a deep breath and remember that I was that we get to be surrendered and loved. Mm-hmm. I needed that more than anything that first night of the tour.
So I just want to say at this moment that, Amy, it's just like you're dropping little moments like this all over town and all over everywhere you go. You know, you're just having these moments. And I just want to, like, take a moment to say thank you. But also, are they being collected? I guess the archivist in me is like, you know, Amy Grant wisdom. We're just soaking it up left and right.
I remember tearing up as Ellie was telling us that story. And I was tearing up listening to it again because I feel like the word surrender is the word that I keep hearing every time I pray. Lately, is just surrender.
Yeah,
all the stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I guess there are only two reactions to have to anything in life, and one is surrender and soften, mm-hmm. you know, and the other is to brace and harden. My dad used to say, oddly enough, somebody that's had too much to drink has a better chance of surviving a car wreck. Because they are not going to brace. Mm. Horrendous picture to think about, but life's like surfing the waves every day. You just have to keep your knees flexed. You don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
You don't. So I hope what people take away from this is drink and drive. And I was just thinking, what a stupid thing to say.
Well, no, it's just,
but it's, you know, it's true. Sometimes when, you know, when the control is out of our hands.
Mm-hmm. And I think, and we're getting pretty deep pretty early, and we'll come up for air later. But your music has been in my life for a really long time in one form or another. There are songs on Lead Me On from 1988. That I've gone back to in the last few years is it seems like the world has just turned sideways a little bit. And you look on the news and there's, it's just like, oh my gosh, and Facebook has become a war zone. Wait for the Healing is the song, I think, that I keep going back to. And it's just about like waiting. There's so many songs like Lead Me On as well, the title track, Wait for the Healing. The message that I get from those is just wait and trust and have faith and living in this kind of mystery or abiding mystery that you don't know, but you know it's going to be all right, which leads us to another song on Leave Me On.
Yeah.
And I guess I just want to ask about that place and just if you ever go back to songs like that where you started, gosh, we were 27 at the time in 88. And just because those songs have morphed for me and still bring me comfort, still bring me perspective all these years later. So I'm wondering if you feel the same in some of those lyrics.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I was singing Lead Me On this morning. I was actually trying to figure out if I'd gotten my voice back because the pollen always hits me pretty hard in the springtime. But yeah, I love how an old song will, like the meaning kind of intensifies or shifts just depending on what season of life you're in. Yeah, it's funny because sometimes I'll look back on a song lyric and I'll think, I was just trying to find rhyming words. And then 2 decades later, I'll go, this is such a deep truth. And I was just such an idiot, you know?
Or maybe something was working through you.
Or maybe something was working through me. I think that's always, that's creativity is always. I think that's why whether somebody professes to have any kind of faith or not, you know, creativity comes in stillness. And everybody knows that it just feels like something all of a sudden it wasn't there, and then the idea appears. And I mean, that will take your breath away. Mm-hmm. And that happens to everybody. I remember talking to Carole King one time. We were in a rehearsal hall getting ready to do a benefit for the Painted Turtle in Los Angeles. And I was saying, God, thanks so much for, you keep going out on the road. And, you know, she was there at rehearsal and sassy, and her boyfriend was like 20 years younger. I was just going, you are impressive on so many levels, but especially because she continued touring.
Right.
And I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And she said, well, you know, I kept getting the call. And when she said that, I'm thinking her manager, Lou Adler. I went, yeah, I mean, sometimes I get the call too. And, you know, and she said, no, not from my manager. You know, I'll think it's time. And as she said, we call it different things, Amy, but it's the same. It's that voice. Mm-hmm. And I went, man, you are so right.
How do you, with just all the noise in the world right now, and we kind of talked about this a little bit with the Ellie quote, but just like even now, just sort of coming back to center with so many things going on around you, to be able to tap into that creativity?
Well, I don't know that I'm using my creativity for other things right now because I have a lot on my plate just with, I have 2 daughters getting married this year. So last night I was with my niece out at our barn where the rehearsal dinner is going to happen in 11 days. anyway, and we had 50 wooden chairs that were not going to be used. Like we're bringing in like matching chairs. And I was just going, I am so sick of these chairs. Because people say, I don't want the chairs where they are. And so you just cram them in a stall. It looks like haystacks. I mean, it is so crazy. And we're looking at these 50 chairs down the middle of the barn. And I said, between the two of us, we can come up with an idea for how to stack these chairs. Anyway, this was no big deal, but we stacked them every way that we could and finally figured out a way that we could stack them 10 chairs high. And I go to the hardware store and get a combination of kind of those eye rings and bungees. We have 2 power drills. We're reinforcing the side of the... Anyway, I came home last night. It was probably 9:30 by the time I got home. And I went, I am so glad for the gift of creativity.
Yeah.
Because creativity is just problem solving. And you use it, you know, when you're the first one in the house and everybody's going, I'm starving. What are we having for dinner? And you just throw an onion in the skillet and everybody goes, it smells fantastic. You go, it's a surprise. Oh my gosh, what else do we have?
Right.
You know, and you're just like in the pantry, what can go with an onion? But to me, all of that kind of, you know, it's just like you just start it. I remember the first Christmas after my mom died, my three sisters and I were so emotionally limp. We just couldn't do anything. We were not going to have a family gathering. My dad was with a caregiver. He had dementia. I was just feeling so awful. I missed my mom. I felt so guilty. So it's probably 3 o'clock Christmas Eve. Didn't have a plan with my dad. I mean, we were all just all a mess. And then all of a sudden, I thought, I can't do this by myself. But I looked at Karina, the youngest. So she was, I guess, 8 or 9 at the time. And I said, hey, let's get showered and cleaned up like we're going someplace really special. Mm-hmm. I'm going to dress up like I'm going on a date. And let's go pick up Doc. And she said, what are we going to do with him? And I said, I don't know yet, but let's just, can you be ready? And so we got ready. We hopped in the car. I had Santa Claus hats. And I just made a plan. I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go pick him up and, you know, in his Depends and sitting on the protective blanket, you know, in the front seat of the car. And I said, I'm just going to call my siblings and whoever's home. We're going to go see their Christmas tree and take a picture with them. And we got to my first sister and she was like, oh, I can't believe you came. Can I get in the car with you? And she got in the car and Karina, and I said, okay, we're headed to my house. We took a picture with Dad in front of every tree. Mm. And once I had one sibling in the car, Karina said, can I please get out of the car? we went to my sister Carol's house. And then my sister Mimi, who lived an hour outside of town, I was calling her and she said, I'm in Green Hills doing something last minute. Pull over. I'm getting in the car with you. And then we went and drove down Sunnyside that has all the lights. And we went to my dad's oldest childhood friend's house. Mm. And they, unbeknownst to me, it was his daughter's house. And they were having Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve. Their whole family was there. Bob came out and gave my dad a big hug. My friend's a photographer. She photographed all of us like singing Oh Come All You Faithful at their front door because we're all just like doing a snot cry. And we went home and it was like, okay, that was magical. Mm-hmm. That was magical. And all we did was just take the first step. And to me, that's creativity. It's like just change the atmosphere. And that might mean get up and put your clothes on. Get up. Turn on some good music, you know, just do something.
Take that one step.
Just take one step. It'll lead to the next one.
As you were talking, it reminded me of a previous interview that we did where I remember you talking about the distance between isolation and connection, like that jump is not that far.
Oh,
if
no.
We would just take that one step.
Yeah. So cooking to me, if ever I've got the blues or just feel, you know, I don't know, just antsy in my own skin, I start cooking. It doesn't mean I'm freaking out if I'm cooking, but to me, that's the one thing. It's just like, if you'll get in there and start chopping, I laugh with Vince. I said, I would have made a great monk except for the sex part because I just love tending to manual labor.
Right.
Chopping veggies or because all of it, it's like it gets your whole body in a rhythm. Outside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you're, I don't know, your mind is like going, I remember, oh man, this reminds me of, remember when we were kids and mm-hmm. we, you know, but it's just like anything to put a new rhythm because all creative people, all of us have a sad side. That's the reason we isolated as children in our room, learning to play an instrument.
Listening to Heart in Motion and performing it. Or alone.
Yes.
Or making up dances to Baby Baby.
All of it. Anybody that has gotten to be good at something that they do alone, it's because they spent time alone. It's because they worked on it. I remember being in, well, once again, we were honoring Carole King. This was a different event, but Lady Gaga was at the piano. Mm. And she said, Carole, every one of us spent more hours than we could ever count alone in our rooms singing to your music. But that was the first time I went, oh, that means every single performer that's ever walked on a stage has done that time. Mm. Every musician has done that time.
Mm. You said something that reminds me of another. Ashley said, "Now, Hunter, we can't talk about old songs the entire time." But I was like, why not? No, I got to tell you, though, and I think when Ashley and I wanted to do this, we really just wanted to connect on different songs or moments or things about you that we've connected with over the years that have really made a difference in our life. Mm-hmm. And for me, somewhere down the road, the lyrics to that second verse, I can't tell you how many times that yesterday I thought I'd seen it all. I thought I'd climb the highest wall. Now I see the learning never ends, and all I know to do is keep on walking around the bend. That is really a life motto for me, like, mm-hmm. because it really has taught me over and over again, I think I've seen everything, and then life just throws you something completely new, but you keep walking and keep, and it's the same message, I guess, that I get from Wait for the Healing and It'll Lead Me On. I mean, but Lead Me On, Amy, you and Wayne wrote lyrics about slavery and the Holocaust, which are like the most profound thing. We're still dealing with that today. Like, you look at the most devastating things that have happened to humanity and you mm-hmm. still walk on. I mean, so mm-hmm. I just, that's the message that I'm getting from your music it's guided me for so long. And mm. I want to thank you for that, for being an instrument for that message to get to me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. No, but that's the thing. I know how much you love Carole King. And so it's just really great that, you know, we get to say these things to the people who have made such a huge impact on our lives. But I do want to ask.
Yes.
So I was listening to the 20th anniversary interviews that came out for Lead Me On, and you're talking about...
And that was 11 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is that?
I'm not going to remember. If you say, what did you mean? Can I tell you, you played that about Ellie, I didn't even remember doing that.
I know.
It's those moments that seem just because you're in a space of connecting, I think, with like, your higher power and God and just in being centered to where I think there are moments for all of us where we say things in the moment or we do just in order to help someone else that just kind of flow through us and we're just the vessel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then you don't remember, but for someone else it had such an impact, you know, years down the road. And what I think a gift that is that God lets us be a part of.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, no, I did just want to ask about Wayne, though. Like, so y'all were writing the songs for Lead Me On, and I'm just, that song, I don't think I've ever heard you talk about. Do you remember what y'all were talking about that you decided to take on those two huge earth-shattering topics in Lead Me On in the verses? Do you remember?
Yes, I still remember that writing session, because we were writing, we had rented the Bennett House recording studio, and we actually were recording in the house. And so we had wired the entire house so that we had all that beautiful echo of those old plaster walls. And, you know, it's a pre-Civil War house. And I think, you know, just the history of that place. So the night that we got together to work on this lyric, the heat was broken in the Bennett house. So there was something about that we kind of liked. Like, it was freezing cold and we were bundled up. Wayne is a big history buff. And I love history. I can't remember all the details the way he does. But the chorus was already written. A lot of times the chorus is the first thing that's finished, even if you go back and rewrite it, because launch and land, you know, with a story, with a song. How are we launching? How are we landing? And so we just started talking, well, what are things that we want to be brought from? And probably because we were at the Bennett House, mm-hmm. probably because it was, you know, the Battle of Franklin was a turning point in the Civil War, probably because there is a rumor that there are ghosts that live in the Bennett House. And I think Brown Bannister, the producer of that record, had a couple of stories while we were working about sort of guitar sounds that were coming from upstairs when no one was playing guitar. I mean, we were just kind of, but just conversation. That's the greatest thing about writing a song is that it's all about the conversation. And then you just, you know, we were more directed with that one, but that's the joy of every songwriting session is you just, it's conscious conversation that you're talking about something and organizing your thoughts until all of a sudden you go, this is worth rhyming. This is worth remembering. And that's true of every song. Yeah. It's cheaper than therapy.
And is that the truth?
Yes. And so many times, you know, for me, I'll go, I don't want to forget this.
Right.
And hopefully eventually it'll work itself into a song. But yeah, and I'm that one came about the same way.
Okay. I'm just like, wisdom. One of the things in sitting in this room that I love is this photo of Minnie Pearl right here. And Minnie was one of my favorite memories growing up with my grandparents on the farm in Kentucky that we still have, was that my parents would ship us off every single weekend. And my grandfather, the only place he ever wanted to go out to eat that wasn't my grandmother's cooking was Cracker Barrel. And so every Saturday night after we'd been running around on the farm all day long, it's still my favorite, most treasured place in the world.
I love that.
Where life, when I walk on it, just even if life doesn't make sense, it just all makes sense when I walk on that farm. And so anyway, every Saturday night, we would have to go to the Cracker Barrel, and then we would go home and watch Hee Haw. And so when I walked in, I was like, I love it, one, because I just love Minnie, and that's what I grew up on. But also just because of the example that she always was in Nashville and kind of bridging that gap between the music business and the philanthropic side of this community and the way that she served so much. And I know that she's been an inspiration. She was a friend to you as well, right?
I met her for the first time when she came and spoke to our like 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I went to Innsworth. And she spoke at our closing exercises, which was like their 8th grade graduation. And I remember at the time, I mean, of course I knew who she was. I had been to the Grand Ole Opry, but when she spoke, it was really, it was riveting. And she got on the stage, not as Minnie Pearl, but as Sarah Cannon. And she was so engaging, respectful, encouraging. And I mean, all of us, you know, we're 8th graders. We all kind of sat up a little taller, and I can't remember what she said now, but I just remember feeling like this is a voice that I want to have in my ear my whole life. And then as I started doing things, she had this peach colored stationery, and she would just write maybe 2 sentences and sign it Minnie. But like, I saw you on such and such, great job, Minnie. And oh, I wish I had kept all those. I don't think I kept one of them.
But that kind of wrecks my heart a little bit.
I know. But it was at Peach Stationery.
Yeah.
And just a line or two. Yeah, it doesn't take much, but it was, you know, I felt encouraged and seen by her. And, you know, it made me want to make the most of the opportunities and laugh at myself, you know. One time.
She's hysterical.
Yes. One time we were changing clothes, both of us, in a powder room at the house where I used to live on Moran Road. And Minnie and Ashley Cleveland, the Fairfield Four, and myself, there might have been somebody else, maybe Paul Overstreet, but we were raising money for Swing for Sight. So that is the charity in Nashville that, you know, it's always the old guard will look at the 20 and 30 somethings going, come on, step up.
Right. Right.
Come on. You know,
we've all paid our dues.
It's time for you. First thing you're going to do is eyesight for the children in Tennessee, you know. And so, but there was so much going on there at the house and in the yard. And so Minnie and I both kind of squirreled away into this tiny half bath. And we were changing clothes. And so I'm not even sure how that, I mean, surely there were other rooms in the house, but I guess not. And then, you know, I'm trying to, I grew up in a family that was fairly modest, you know, and so I'm trying, you know, I've got my back to her, and she said, well, would you look at this? And so I turn around and she's naked from the waist up. And she said, I'm old everywhere, but I'm 17 from here to here. And she had her hand on her, like on her collarbones and right above her belly button, talking about her reconstructed breasts because she had breast cancer. I'm old everywhere else, but I'm 17 from here to here. And she just like was highlighting her chest.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I know. And I just, oh my gosh, I love that. I love that, yeah. So.
What do you feel like, was there a piece of advice or what do you feel like you learned most from her?
I think what we wanted to ask about this was we see you living out her example in a lot of ways.
Oh, man.
Well, because I think about, we were talking about this the other day. Like, I was there the other night at Thistle Farms at the fundraiser, which is one of my favorite events every year. And I love Thistle Farms so much. And I know they were honoring you that night for your work with Thistle Farms. And Becca Stevens is like one of those people that I'm like, if I could just have dinner with like Oprah, Brene Brown, and Becca.
Or Amy Grant.
Oh, and Amy Grant. We've been by Amy. But just, I think, what she's built and seen a need in this community of women in trying to serve and love women that are coming out of prostitution and sex trafficking and addiction. And just seeing the way when we really pour in and just love people and meet them right where they are, the transformation and beauty that can happen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for you, I think that's kind of what we're talking about and just in being in this community and serving this community so well and showing up and loving other people. Like, how is Minnie an example for you in that?
So I think the biggest thing I saw in her and learned from her, she just treated everybody the same.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing. And she was approachable all the time. She might not have on her mini pearl hat, but I saw her in black tie social settings. I saw her at the Opry. I saw her at a sound check. You know, and she just treated everybody the same.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's quoted many times as telling other performers, you know, love your audience, they'll love you back. But that was, that didn't appear to be a switch she turned off and on. I think she just was open-hearted and kind-hearted with people in general. And so, you know, just, she just kicked it up a notch when she was on stage. And laughing, just laughing. I think about how, you know, she and Henry never had kids. Yeah. And so I don't recall her ever even talking about that. But, you know, she just kind of made the whole world her kid. And you were saying, when you were saying some, oh, I had a thought that was in my head. Oh, it's gone now. Oh, well.
Was that talking about Thistle Farms?
Oh, yeah.
And seeing how love can transform.
Well, here's the amazing thing about Thistle Farms. That Becca had a flash of an idea, a flash of a thought that was actually unsettling. When she was buckling her wiggly toddler, her four-year-old, into a car seat, pregnant. Some of us have been there, and it's just like, oh my gosh. But he asked a question about a billboard. And it was unsettling to her. All of a sudden, she started thinking about that woman, the call girl. And when we're all sitting there, and now there are hundreds of women that have come off the street, I just kept going, Becca, if you had not given that angsty thought your attention, if you hadn't just sat with it, I mean, somewhere in there, she made a space in her mind and in her heart to consider that thing that was like the grain of sand in the oyster. And that's where it started. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a great reminder about the things that like, kind of stick in your craw or you go, or uncomfortable or something that makes you sad or to go, what if that's always the seed for something amazing? You know, I think about my friend Cindy Parsegian, and her son was diagnosed with a really rare genetic neurological condition. Mm-hmm. And then it turned out three of her four kids had it. So she had a 10-year arc of watching three of her four children die. Mm. But she took that experience in her life, which is so extreme, and has actually raised a lot of money, created a research foundation that has done so much medical work, research and development for families of you know, struggling with the same Niemann-Pick type C. I mean, that's a huge one. But I don't know, it's like everything you pass driving down the road was somebody's idea that they just fanned the flame. Whether it's a library or a trailer park or Percy Warner Park. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything that doesn't just appear in nature was somebody's idea. And they just kept thinking about it. And eventually it became what it is, you know.
Well, and I think it's one of those things, too, where had Becca just sort of passed over that moment and let it been a fleeting thought, much like you said, you know, I don't know, where would all these women be now, you know? Oh, and yeah. Instead they're living lives that have been transformed by love and are being able to support themselves and be in this loving community. And so I think what I wonder for you as you were talking about that is, like, what has been that moment for you where you felt that the still small voice call you into something that you listened and it led you down a path that has been really beautiful?
Well, I don't think I can point to anything as overall life-changing as Thistle Farms, but I was on my way to a rehearsal, and it was a rainy November night, and I was talking to a friend of mine who had borrowed this little area of our farm to do a weekend retreat with some friends, and she was a life coach. And anyway, I called her back. It was on Sunday night, and she said, I had all this programming for these women wanting to make a change in their life, but we didn't even really need the programming. We just needed that fire. Mm. She said, half of us are still here. And I said, well, stay. This is a hilltop at our farm with these three buildings from the late 1800s. Very, very rustic. Not Ralph Lauren rustic, just snakes and mice rustic. Anyway, and so I said, well, okay, stay. Nobody's coming out there. I mean, it's not a great time of year weather-wise. Monday night, I call her back. I'm on my way to do a rehearsal for the CMA Christmas show. So I'm like in the middle of traffic, and I'm getting ready to go put on stage hair and makeup. And I said, so tell me, how did it go with the women? And she said, you're not going to believe this. Three of us are still here. And in that moment, I said, will you just sit here on the phone with me? Because I have an idea. I just need to pull this out of, I need to grab onto it and say it out loud to somebody. Mm. What if we started a fire in that fire pit, outdoor fire thing, at the very beginning of a new year? And how long did you have to be out there? Like, what did you say was enough time? She said 48 hours. And I said, what if we invite people to come and keep that fire going? And so they think they're doing us a favor because we're saying we're going to see how long we can keep this fire going. But what if actually we both benefit from it because they step away from their life and have to do just basic things, you know, keep a fire going. And they're outside, and it's, I mean, they've got shelter, but it's just so different. What if we kept it going for like 2 weeks? What if we kept it going for 3 weeks? I mean, it doesn't even really matter, but anyway. And so she said, well, I'm telling you, that's all we needed was a fire. It was therapy all by itself. But then I kept thinking about this idea, and I went, this is so crazy. This is a stupid idea. Well, maybe it's not. And then about a handful of days later, I don't think it was even December yet, and I got a text from a porter at a hotel. It was Lake Oconee Lodge, and I had gone there to do a creative weekend, and this porter was so wonderful. He's a father of five kids. His life had taken some unexpected turns, but I wanted to stay in touch with him. Anyway, a friend of mine had an outdoor program, especially for kids that were struggling, that I felt like one of his kids could benefit from. So it wasn't just I was wanting to have coffee with a porter. I felt like I knew somebody that I could connect mm-hmm. this gentleman to. Out of the blue, he said, "We have moved into a house with a tiny yard. I'm going to get a dog for my kids. As a matter of fact, we have found a dog in Westmoreland, Tennessee. So I thought I'd bring my whole family, my wife, my mother-in-law, our five kids, but I would love for them to do something special. Do you by chance know of any like rustic cabin or just something that's really different? Someplace that I could stay with my kids mm-hmm. while we go get this dog?" And I said, "Any chance you would stay for 48 hours? And he said, "Yes." And that's when I said, "I'm going to do this." And that first year, we started the fire on December 31st and let it go out May 1st.
Hmm.
And I have, and we're, so this is our third year to have done that.
Wow.
I've been walking, you know, down the aisles of Publix, Kroger. People have come up that I've never met. "I've kept your fire before," and hugged me, and yeah.
But I can only imagine for those people, too, just having that space to completely check out and what that has done for their heart.
Yes, because a lot soul. Of people will say, "Oh, yeah. I want a farm." And you go, "No, you don't.
A lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it costs a lot."
Yeah.
Yeah. But to me, this was just a way during really usually inclement weather,
yeah.
January, February, March, April, to give somebody the challenge of keeping a single fire burning.
Right.
But then also you're giving them the gift of being woken up by a bird song in the morning, hearing it at mm-hmm. night, sitting under a full moon, you know, bundled up, no kidding, in 10-degree weather, and there are snowflakes, and you're going, "Okay, whew, I got to go put two more logs on this." What feels inconsequential and nothing,
yeah.
to me, I believe 20 years from now,
right,
that hundreds of people will have sat by that fire, that it will have, in a tiny, very inexpensive way, made an incremental shift in the trajectory of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Thistle Farms is huge. But I think the tiny ways that we open up our lives.
It's just like, even it's a 1 to 2 degree shift of opening ourselves up in whatever gifts and talents we have been given mm-hmm. to be able to help someone else. And in this sense of what we've talked about is just you're keeping the fire, you're keeping a fire burning that you need to keep burning, but then giving people the space to rest and breathe and what that can do for them for years down the road.
Yeah. And to say what fires, like they might go, "What fires do I need to stoke in my own life? My right. dreams, my relationships." Reminds me of Christmas.
No, I just know that we wanted to mention it, but also, so in getting ready for this and the songs, I had all these like deep album cuts because I'm an Amy Grant discography nerd. And Ashley kept coming back to Breath of Heaven over and over again. So I wanted to have a space to talk about that. And also yeah. the Vince and Amy Ryman Christmas extravaganza tickets are on sale right now. Plan ahead, because I have so many people come up to me like, "I want to go in December." I'm like, "Sorry, plan ahead."
Yeah, you have to plan ahead.
Yeah.
But that we you bring up Breath of Heaven, and yesterday I was standing in my kitchen and I hadn't listened to that song in so many years. And it was a song that I think growing up and singing in recitals and Christmas programs, that was one that I always ended up singing. But yesterday I was standing in my kitchen going back through, knowing we were coming today, just the hits of Amy Grant. And I started listening to Breath of Heaven. And then I was cooking dinner. I actually started listening to the words. And then I just started crying as I was like singing along with you. And I'm like, gosh, this song and the words that have poured out of this song and the hope that has connected with so many people in that moment. I was like, "Breath of Heaven, light in the darkness, pour over me your holiness, for you're holy." And when just I think about that song and what it is at Christmas for so many people, but even in the middle of April, standing in my kitchen, listening to it and the way those words just connect in a different way now than they did when I was 13 in a recital. When I don't think I knew really what I was singing about then, but now after some life experience, it takes on a whole new meaning. So I have to wonder for you, like with Breath of Heaven, you're singing that song at Christmas, like what that meaning takes on for you now?
The collective weight of everyone's life is what it feels like.
Mm.
Like this last year, it's funny, this last year at Christmas, you know, because Vince and I do this Ryman, what are they called?
Residency.
Right. You know, we try to go, well, what can we do that's different? What can we do that will make this, make somebody go, oh, I'm so glad I came back, because it was different from the year before. Anyway, but one of those things was the treatment of Breath of Heaven.
Hmm.
You know, to not have the big spooky chord, but to sing it as a song for everyone.
Yeah.
Because I do think it translates. I mean, you know, it was inspired by imagining Mary.
Yeah.
But boy, do those words fit every life at some point,
yep.
Except the virgin birth part. But
that's exceptional.
A minor detail. But, yeah. You know.
But everything else, man, we've all felt that way. Yes. Yeah. And so I love that you, you know, sang it in innocence at 13.
Yeah.
And then owned it
mm-hmm.
as a grown woman.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm tearing up as we're talking about it again. I already cried yesterday.
Well, I've actually Facebook messaged your manager about this, but I do need Home for Christmas on vinyl.
Oh, fantastic.
That's my formal request.
Okay.
Right here. Just what you did with Home for Christmas, the low-key way it starts so lush with Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and two, like, it's the most wonderful time of the year, and you're immediately at Saks Fifth Avenue on, you know, with all the displays.
Mm.
It's just, I need it on vinyl. So
Ron Huff. Those are all Ron Huff arrangements.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So before we go, I had a few questions from my Amy Grant text chains around the country. So basically, whenever anything goes on with you, mm-hmm. I have friends all over the country that I text with and let them know.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted to let them have a moment here.
Okay. Hunter's like an additional publicist
yes.
that you didn't know that you had.
So okay. My friend Alan Heinberg, who's a writer in L.A.
Alan has been to the fire.
Yeah. Oh, Alan, we talk about you a lot. But he had heard somewhere that when you were making Heart in Motion, there was some resistance to having Baby Baby on it or it being the first single.
Right.
Did that happen?
Yes. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was signed to two record companies.
A&M and then
A&M and Murr. So Roald Lundy was the president of Murr, of Word Records, and Murr was a label under Word. And yes, Roland had a real, you know, just wondering if we were pushing the envelope too much. And the head of A&M said, I don't think pop radio is going to buy this. I think we should deliver it brown bag. I think, should this be a duet? That was one thing. Maybe this should be a duet with somebody else. And so, anyway.
Because it was repositioning you in a pretty major way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it was right after Lead Me On, mm-hmm. which was a more somber record. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the pendulum swings to the left and to the right. And for all the ways that Lead Me On was serious, woo, I was just ready for some fun. And it was a fun time in life.
The keyboard sounds on Baby Baby still knock me off my feet to
Keith Thomas.
Day.
I mean, we created a lot of dances to Baby Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. So it provided a lot of fun for us.
I'm so glad.
Oh, and there was one thing. So I'd interviewed you before at a thing here in town. We were talking about your career from the record label side. And something that I asked you there that I want out in the world as well was that, and I already know the answer because I've already asked you, was that your move to the pop world with Heart in Motion was not spurred by A&M because they were losing Janet Jackson to another record label. It was just an organic progression on your own.
Right. I was already at A&M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was just wondering, since I heard you say something on another podcast that you were always a part of someone's fiscal year with your
life. Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to go on record because I'd always wondered that. Okay. Next question is from Abby in Chicago.
Okay.
She wants to know what's on your workout playlist.
I don't work out. Yeah. Is that crazy?
Well, I would suggest the Amy Grant In Motion dance remixes mm-hmm. that you had made a few years ago.
Yes.
They're on all your streaming services. They're modern dance updates.
Those are fun.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for that. I mean, that's one of those things of like, if I could dream this up, this would be real, but it would never happen. And then you made it happen. So thank you for doing
really
that.
Thanks to Jennifer Cook, because she kept that on the back burner for years. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Because you're the reason I know about remixes. Like, I would get the singles of all the songs on Heart in Motion.
Oh, okay.
And there were the remixes, and it would just, like, it really got me interested in production.
Early, like, 90s, that was like remix.
Yeah. But it was so well done. Okay, final question, and then I'll let Ashley
mother had a question. Okay. No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Christina Barnes, who's here in town, mm-hmm. she wanted to know about your approach to skincare, because you are a spiritual leader to us, but also a beauty leader.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I am a big fan of a scrubber in the, okay. you know.
Exfoliation.
Yes. Also, if we're just going to tell it all, I actually shave my entire face.
Same. It's really good for you.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at least once a week, okay. my entire face. Yeah. Wow. It's a great exfoliation. And, you know. That's really the big thing. I'm given a lot of great products, but I just use whatever's in the hotel, honestly. Yeah.
Keep it simple. But yeah, the face shaving.
Face shaving really, and scrubbing. I mean, yeah, I have a back scrubber, and I'm telling you, I use it on my face. Yeah.
I love my little exfoliator for my face. Mm-hmm. It really, that was a transition for me when I actually started shaving my face, because makeup and just everything goes on so much easier.
Yes, it does.
I had no idea.
Younger skin, collagen. We need to talk about all that. But my mother wanted to know, she's like, what has Amy learned on her journey in the music business and in her daily walk? I was like, I feel like that's a really loaded question.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge question.
I know.
What have I learned?
If there's just one thing that you've learned either in your daily walk or in the music business? Load of questions, Mom.
Right. This is just off the top of my head. I'm not really thinking through this, but I would just say every day is new. Mercy is new. And it is possible to begin again moment by moment.
Yeah.
You know, it is. And so just, And the other thing is, I think it's important to have a safe place to be able to write down what you really think. I make a habit of that. I used to be scared somebody would find my notebooks, and then I thought, oh, well, my writing is so awful they couldn't read it. But I really think we live in such a cluttered world that if you will find a way to write every day, or at least several times a week, that, and if you're really just going, rah, 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 like saying whatever's in there, and I'm so frustrated, or I'm so scared, or I was so hurt, if you're saying, I'm going to keep moving this pen until I fill 3 pages, which is what I try to do, somehow once you've said something, it's off the hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep that pen moving, I believe, allows the spirit to then speak to us. Because even when we try to pray, we've all got monkey brain.
Right.
You know, just monkey brain. But dedicating that pen to the line on the page and saying, I'm going to keep moving this pen, that's where I have been the most surprised and moved by new understanding. And it's been a great outlet to be a friend to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a friend to yourself, which really is actually, I think, in a way, integral to also accepting the love of God. You know, we sing that song, What a Friend We Have in Jesus.
Yeah.
But you have to be open to friendship. You know, you could have the greatest gift sitting there in an Amazon box on your front porch, but if you're not opening it up, it's not doing you any good.
Well, and I think sometimes the hardest thing for us is to love ourselves.
Absolutely.
And take care of ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. And so many people just walk around in the fog and don't know who they are, don't know.
Right.
I mean, I remember one night I was just writing in those pages. I had corrected Vince's table manners. It was the worst thing. It sucked all the air out of the restaurant. And that night, I was visiting him. He was on the road with the Eagles. And I was like, get this through your thick head. Nobody gives a flying about table manners. Why are you so worried? Just chew with your own mouth closed. And I'm going on and on and on. And suddenly out of my pen. And just because you feel so guilty about the months before your father died. And then all of a sudden, this stuff started pouring out. But it's because I made a space. for the first layer of angst to come off and the next layer. And what was really eating me up was that my dad, something about that, you know, my dad had awful table manners. But it was funny how one thing triggered.
Yeah.
And there was all this stuff that needed to come out. So I would say,
put that pen to paper. And then you never know if you go back. Like, that's the thing. So I'll write my prayers in a journal and like gratitude. And then I'll go back months or years later and be like, oh, wait, that was answered. It was not answered the way I thought, but it was answered.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank anyway, you, Amy Grant.
Thanks, Amy.
I can't believe this happened.
This was fun. Y'all have a fun job.
Oh, man. I mean, my heart is just so full after sitting with Amy today and just the wisdom, but then also just she's so funny.
I know. I
mean,
blushed.
So funny.
I mean, I was like, I can't believe that Amy just said that, but she did and I love it.
Oh, gosh. This is one of those where I feel like I'm going to need to go back and listen to it because there's so much wisdom and so many things that she says that I don't want to forget. And so it's also like the first time I've ever seen you speechless at a point.
Yeah. So, I think now I'm just like, we're trying to think, what do you say? I mean, it's Amy Grant. I mean, she's been a hero to me for so long. And it runs on two levels. It's like she's a hero, but also she's the most open, friendly person that you'd ever want to meet. So I think
so it's approachable. So
I think
kind.
It's like in the moment I'm like, oh, hey, Amy. And of course I'm like able to talk. And now like now that it's over, I'm just like, oh my gosh, that happened. And then you have to process it. And it just takes you a minute. I'm sorry. I'm not very verbose right now. Well, I'm not making sense, but it's Amy Grant.
That's true. I feel like we do need to process. Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was such a gift for both of us. And I know it was for anyone listening at home too. You guys can find us on social media at All Our Favorite People. You can find me at Ashley Eicher. You can find Hunter at Nashville HK. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We don't want you to miss a single episode. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we will see you next week.
It was Amy Grant.